Well, I think peace is the result of pressing one's emotion. Like often when we are angry and we want to like fight back or take revenge, our mind tells us that we have to suppress this emotion and we have to deal with it and talk to other people and solve the problem instead of fighting back. And this is actually process of dealing with emotions, suppressing it and then soothing it and then channel it into another type of energy. Yes, and this is the result. And yes, and I think peace is invented, the word and the concept is because there is a conflict. And that's why people understand what peace is. If there is no conflict, then people would not have that concept of peace. And then, well, yes. And I think to feel peaceful, it depends very much on one's attitude and one's belief that how you view things and how you face your situation.
I mostly feel that I'm in peace when I lay my bed, when I think of everyone being healthy and happy with the people that they live with. So I feel the peace. But then when I think somebody's sick, someone in my country from my family is not feeling well. So even though I am in a very peaceful atmosphere in my house in Hong Kong, I don't feel peaceful anymore. So it depends.
And I say that then, is peace exists when one is alone and detached from others?
Well, I would say that peace, I don't know if I'm really responding to what she said or what you're trying to ask, but peace is actually understanding. It's how you understand what it's related to, what your desire is and what your want is. I think sometimes when I have endless things that I want, like a degree or a job or a healthy family, all these might be, you know, cannot be fulfilled to me to a certain degree, and I feel this great sense of disturbance in me. So, but once if I understand my ability, and which cannot get me to those status like for example health. Okay, I was born with asthma, so I cannot really achieve a state of health just like everyone else because I was born that way. So if I understand my personal condition and if I am able to extend it so that I can be able to understand the status or the conditions of other people, then I can get back this peace. I mean, why do I say get back? Because I think that peace is in everyone right from the very beginning when we were born. So it's not something that we need to achieve or get. It's actually in us. But all the unfulfilled desires actually emerges us in a turmoil that we are getting troubles for ourselves, actually.
I agree with Erica that it's about understanding, but I think what Erica mentioned is about, you know, like our internal understanding ourselves. But also I think usually we define people from good people, bad people, you know, like, and good people, evil people. But if we zoom out a bit and we understand, you know, like, actually there are some kind of universal needs that we all look for. Some people, you may think that they're very noisy and evil, but actually maybe he or she is also looking for love, looking for care. But if we have the ability to zoom out and then we look at the problem or the issues from that way, then I think understanding, to me, it's peace is understanding. And and also peace is about not imposing your values or your things on the other people. Yeah, conflicts always come in that way. It's the way that people are trying to impose their things on that rather than concentrate on, you know, like the well-being of humanity or things like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Talking about that need and desire, I think it's humans' yearn for building up relationship with other people and yearning for the feeling of love, that they want to make peace. It is the motivation, because normally there are a lot of conflicts and benefits among people, and then it's hard to have peace. But then it's the yearning to build a relationship with other people is the only motivation that that urges us to make peace with other people and keep everything peaceful.
I think peace can be achieved in a state of isolation, because I think I get peace when I'm alone in a room. Yes. So I think when there are people, there will be comparison and conflict. So you can only get peace in isolation.
Great.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think peace is really difficult to define if not in opposed to the concept of war. Yeah, so maybe, yeah, personally, I think maybe peace is related to happiness. Maybe, yeah, then there's, when you're happy, then you will find, you will feel positive, and then there's some kind of peace, I think.
For me, I think happiness and peace is not exactly the same. Happiness is even more shorter than peace, because peace is like, how can I say that? It's like, for example, if color, bright red will be the passion, the color for happiness. But for peace, it's more like a white color that is more stable and subtle.
A higher status.
Yes.
How do you broach the private and the public? If peace is always defined, as many of you have, as something that attaches to your a sense of solitude or privacy or intimacy, how do we move from there to something more global or political in a conventional sense, or should we not?
I think the idea of a country is very problematic. Because it actually refers to a sense of possession and sense of belonging, and that actually divides the people instead of uniting the people. When we are looking at like all the people on the earth instead of the people in one country, and yes, because like they are fighting for their status, fighting for money, fighting for resources, that a lot of conflicts arise. So if the idea of country is removed, I think the world will be more peaceful.
But talking about how to break the public and the private sphere, it just reminds me, there's a program in the 2B Pros, like 6 million people story, or I'm not sure if you... And I love that program very much, and I think it is bring your everyday life, your personal stories, and then from different countries, and then you will find there are some common thing that we really share. And to me, I don't know, it just suddenly remind me that maybe that's the way that we can link up, you know, like our private life and put it on a more public way to express, or yeah, I don't know.
Because human cannot really live alone, actually. Because we have to have family, and we have this yearning for love for humanity. And actually, for example, like the building we are sitting in is built by someone. So it's actually we are depending always on people. So it's not like an isolated individual, but one has to depend willingly or unwillingly, no matter what, on other people. So I think it's public, it's this environment we cannot escape.
I think the idea of like institution, like when the just returning to what you said about the concept of countries, why the countries are constantly competing with each other economically, or you know, culturally, they want to dominate, you know, in the media or in cultures, because of this idea of institution that well, if I go back to the 19 to last century, okay, when China was divided and separated by the European countries, by the greatest eight European countries, they actually they compete so that they want to be the top eight countries in the world, or by colonizing India and China, or you know, Hong Kong. They want to be the top, you know, in terms of economy or culture. So I think this idea of institution, or this the desire to get into the center of the world, to take charge of the world, to resume power, or to get power, it's what getting the countries competing with each other, and they even use physical violence to achieve this. Yeah, so I think it's the idea of maybe initially it's the social classes, but then as society just moves on, we develop this idea of institution, and yeah, and
actually I think it's inspired by first of all, like your definition of countries as problematic, but I think countries and institutions are necessary, because when a place is too large, that one cannot, it's like there is a large company, but there is only one manager, and then you will never see the manager, and so that's why we have a lot of supervisors underneath, and so they have to pay attention to those groups of people, and that's why we have classes and not just one very whole lectures and maybe tutorials in order to have more intimate interaction. So I think institutions is necessary in a way that it actually encourage more contact with the individual.
Could anybody explain to me the ideogram for peace?
Wo-ping really means harmony. Is that right?
Harmony.
What is harmony in Chinese?
Wo-hai. Wo-hai, not
peng. Why do they both have wo?
Yeah. When they war, it's when together. But together, just together. For example, like together.
It means and.
Oh. And then not yeah. arguing, it has that sense. And then.
What about ping by itself?
Flat. And.
Or equal.
Yeah, equality. And.
And actually, the ping, the word is. It's like, what is that called?
A balance?
Yes, a balance, yes.
Do you find it translatable? Your English idea of peace, and then this Cantonese idea of wo-ping, is it the same to you?
I think no, actually. Because I feel Chinese culture is quite different from the Western culture, actually. So when I received the Chinese culture in my Form 7, and it was like this. The Chinese is always talking of 我以不同, and it's like harmony in diversity. Yes, and but actually for the peace in the Western concept, the first impression that comes to me is like the feminism, the rights, they're equal, but not of a more internal peaceful feeling.
For Chinese, it may be more collective, sort of family among people, between people. But for Western, maybe it's about my own right is equal to your own right. The equality is based on this. But ours would be, we feel peace because all the family members have good relationship. We gather together during Lunar New Year, have a dinner together, autumn festival, and all people are healthy. In this sense, it's also including other people as a unity. This unity, the people yeah. in this unity, they are very peaceful, healthy, etc.
And it reminds me of the Tai Chi. It echoes with your idea of 我以不同. To me, that's a kind of a symbol of peace as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then the Hong Kong government or the Chinese government, when they talk about 我平, What do they talk about when they talk about
war? Actually, they don't talk much about war. They seem to relate it to war and peace, that kind of peace. But then they talk about 和諧, that is harmony.
They talk about 和諧, they talk about equality.
Yeah.
Two terms they always use is harmony and equality. Harmony, mainly we are talking about the policy, including the people, people from mainland China and things like that. We used to have harmony, but then equality, you know, like in those law and things like that. And then the government would adopt the terms. Yeah.
Actually, what is the term in Chinese? Harmony and equality.
和諧咯，同埋
公正啊，公平啊，公平。
I see, really friend. They say that this website is being harmonized by the government. It means that it is closed down by the government. So because the China is always screening those websites, yes. Because when I first read the word, I do not know, and then I go on to search the meaning. Yeah.
So when I said that I'd like to talk with you tonight about peace, why did it not call up all of these other overtones and meanings?
I think for peace, this wording in the language, because language also carries the cultural background. Mm-hmm. But for Chinese, I think for Chinese, it's a collective meaning. Means a group of people, they share the same identity, for example, in the family, etc. They all of them are good. Then they think they are. Then it's not very individual. It's very collective, which is different from the Western culture.
So, do you think if we sat down and we said we want to talk about war pain, then the conversation would begin differently?
I think English words is more specific, but Chinese words, they have a lot of meanings. When talking in Chinese about harmony, about peace, then it will become more general and inclusive of other meanings.
Do you have a clear sense of like identification with, let's say, Hong Kong as a city, or with China and the mainland? Like, how do you navigate in your own lives these questions of nationality and identification with a social collectivity?
Well, for nationality, I regard myself as a Hong Konger, but culturally, I think I'm a Chinese. Inherit all the cultures and tradition and history of China, of that of the past 5,000 years. But then, in mainland China, they've got the Cultural Revolution, and then a lot of cultures were forgotten and removed. And then, so it seems that those Chinese in mainland China have lost their Chinese culture and that identity. But we Hong Kong people think that we still have at least some part of it. When you ask the teenagers in Hong Kong who do they think they are, and they would more agree to the statement that they are Facebook users than they are Chinese or they are Hong Konger, because it's clearer to them and it's more close to their life.
I think I regard myself as Chinese, okay? But when I went to university and I started to meet some of the students from the mainland China, and then when I look at the name list, and then the way they have their name, the pinyin, is different. Difference. I don't know why, just the name, and then, from the name I know that they're from mainland. I have a sense that I'm a Chinese.
I remember I watched a TV program about some Hong Kong students taking a study trip or something back to China, and the TV host actually interviewed them before they went on the trip, and asking them what identity would you take? Would you say that you are Hong Konger or Chinese? Then the students say that I would call myself a Hong Konger. But after they went on the trip, they actually saw a lot of developments in the infrastructures in southern China. So after they came back to Hong Kong, they did this interview again, the TV host, and then the students would say that now I will call myself a Chinese, just because, just out of the reason that they find China has great economic development. So I think like identity, it's like changeable for some people. It's not really confined by geographical location, and they will align themselves with people with economic power maybe. Okay, so I think like what you said before, more teenagers nowadays will say that they are Chinese. I remember after 1997, after Hong Kong was handed over to China, actually in my generation, many people will still hold a BNO passport, but actually fewer people nowadays will do that. They will just hold this Hong Kong passport. But I'm thinking between, you know, the peace and power, this kind of thing.
But it's quite interesting. We always hold two passports, one BNO and one...
Do you have a British national passport?
Yes, we got a BNO, but I gave it up. I have two passports, and I'm just wondering, which one should I take?
Actually, the identity of a person is changeable. For example, he may work in another country, city, and then may settle down there, then his identity change. It's not lifelong identity. It's only temporary. Maybe in the future, one of us will not live in Hong Kong, live in US, and we may and after a decade, we may think we are an American, no longer a Chinese. So, yeah.
People can have different identities at the same time.
Some people, their parents, maybe one is an American, and then is another one is a Chinese. Maybe he lived in Chinese for 10 years, and then moved to America, and then may move to Hong Kong. Then he has dual identities, multi-identities. And in the future, you may change to live in another country. Who knows? It's rather changeable and complicated.
I think the way that people, they are afraid when the handover comes is because there is no stability. Whenever there is changes, people are afraid that there will not be peace.
Yeah, and I once heard a person saying that they'd rather be superior or just Chinese citizen instead of being an inferior British citizen. Because, you know, holding the same BNO, you are treated differently, and then actually you know you're not British.
Yes.
Yeah, and because of that, so we can see that within a nationality or within an identity, there are still inferior and superior, and then we can choose.
I have a whole other question.
If you consider yourself Chinese, what does the Tiananmen Square massacre mean to you?
The power of memory, you know, like after all these years, we still remember. And then to me, I don't know, after all these years, and I watch different documentaries and I read about the news again, and I still find it very heartbroken. And but it's quite interesting when I told some of the students from mainland China saying how heartbroken I am, and then they will comfort me and then saying that actually we mainland people have already, you know, like we don't feel sorry about that, and we get over it, and how come your Hong Kong people still cannot get over it? And I think it's quite ridiculous. Oh really, you people get over it? Really? I still cannot. And then I don't understand why things are happening in that way.
I once talked to a friend who went to the Peking U to study for several years. Before she went to Beijing, she says completely different things. But then after she went to Beijing, she said that it's understandable that the Chinese government has did such a thing, because it is to unify the whole country and
harmonize.
And then at that time there were a lot of power struggles, and then if the leader didn't do such a thing, then the country will be divided. My friend said that in a natural disaster, more people die than that is.
It goes back to what you said about memory. Hong Kong people have had to live with this memory, whereas for Chinese people, the memory has been altered.
Yes, that's true.
I once heard that a reporter working in a Chinese newspaper, they received an advertisement saying it's a memorial of the mine accident in June 4th. and then they didn't know what actually happened in June 4th. And then that reporter posted that memorial on the newspaper, and then she was fired the next day. Actually, it's the activist sending the memorial up and pretending it to be the mine accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that even educated people like the reporters, they do not get hold of such information and they do not know much about it.
I think we Hong Kong people, I cannot say on behalf of everyone, but for me, it's still in my memory because I think we were educated under this British education system. And for the Westerners, I think they very much in tune with the sense of justice or equality, whereas the Chinese, they think that, you know, money can solve problem, and then it doesn't matter to corrupt people, or fair play is not the issue. It doesn't matter, you know, I just want to be rich, and I don't care, you know, the rights of other people will be deprived of, or, you know, something like that. So giving such a difference between ideological thinking, I think I can kind of see why the mainland Chinese will easily let this part of their memory go, or being washed away by economic power. But then for me, I would think that the injustice that the Chinese government did onto the mainland students back in 1987, right? We need to be pengfan, is what is like. I want it to be justified still after so many years. Yeah, even though some of them are already in America, but they still bear the name this infamy that I feel very uncomfortable with. Yeah.
Well, I think for mainland Chinese, it's now the economic power, the money, their money that they have that defines them, that and this is what they identify with only. And because they have lost their cultural root, and that's the only thing that they can hold on to. And so they will look onto it as more important, and then the other things will be undermined.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder, is the June 4th incident included in the textbook right now? That's another issue that I...
So they will not know this.
Have
no feeling. Difference. And the Chinese government, they banned many relevant websites. Harmless.
I remember there was an artist posting a message on Twitter in memory of the June 5th. Just June 5th. But then on the morning of the June 3rd, he posted the message. So instead of saying June 4th, he said June 5th. But then the message was removed. So even in China, okay, this happened in China. So the Chinese government is very... If they are so sensitive to issue, that means they have done something wrong. Yeah.
I think for the Chinese government, it's about the Chinese interpretation of the word peace, because they think for peace that is there is no demonstration, no protest, and all the citizens are very obedient. So they just try to harmonize the citizens by banning certain websites and for the past events which they treated the students or others in the country unfairly. They just want to wash away those memories, so that all the people would shut up and work hard, sort of like that.
Yeah.
But the Nobel Peace Prize, is it really encouraging competition? Because when you, for example, like make some great book or some scientific discovery that you will be awarded, it seems like a more... But in the China, like she said, it's more like doing nothing. Yes.
Because for the Western perception, it's very different. It's about
improving the
individual, your group's interests. But for China, they just want every group to pacify their discontent. They will be so-called very harmony in the country, just like a family, the family, they are very united, and somehow some people have to sacrifice something for this collective peacefulness. But for Western country, the individualism is very strong. Everyone, I should fight for my own interests, and they encourage this sort of protest. That is very different viewpoint.
Well, to us, that the Chinese government is always doing something very inhumane but logical in that sense. So, China will lose face if Liu Xiaobo received the prize, and then they will not want to see that. I think that their sense of or idea of peace is top down, that they want to maintain a peaceful scene, and they do not really respect individual, and that is only maintained by authority and power. But and that is actually already very different from our concept of peace, which is in the level of individuals, that it involves mutual respect and an equal relationship between people.
Is there anything else that anybody wants to add?
Actually, how do the Westerners see the word peace? Because we as Chinese, we see from the side, the outsider, how would they interpret this word?
Why do you think you see it as an outsider?
Because I'm not a Westerner. I do not really understand them. I just try to guess from what I learned and observed.
The subaltern.
How do they perceive this word?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I can only talk for myself and how I perceive things. But I think the word peace is often associated not with the home, not with the private or the personal, but with something more global. And I think there's often this perception that peace is constantly under threat, or it needs to be almost enforced or enacted, or collective security needs to be maintained so as to one day have a more peaceful relationship or society. So it's such a complicated moment in America and in the West, at least for me.
But your definition just there is very similar to the definition that you guys defined why China needs harmony, right? It's this sense of enforcing, this sense of needing under crisis to maintain a certain kind of order. I felt it was similar.
I'm interested in the way that the very idea of peace is like co-opted and instrumentalized by governments, by institutions, by individuals in the service of all sorts of things that I wouldn't think of as peaceful. So I'm interested in like what happens to a word when it's used in so many different ways, but in ways that are antithetical to what I believe the word embodies, like what the spirit of the word is. And I'm interested in like what do we do when we see various ideas or terms, co-opted and implicated by actions that make it mean something very different. Like Orwell, right? He teaches us in his writings on language and power, on the kind of the peculiarity of modernity, where like a word like peace can be used to mean war, and sometimes there's a way in which language becomes something very dangerous and potent. It's a scene not just of defining one's dreams or aspirations, not just of literature in the best of ways, but also in the most dangerous of ways. Language becomes the means by which you enact a different kind of politics, you enforce a certain idea. So when I think of peace, I think of like the complexity of the world we live in, where like there are completely antithetical and contradictory definitions of peace that exist simultaneously and will not, they cannot be reconciled, or at least right now they cannot be. And so in the West, I feel like there are all of these different definitions that have entered into circulation, and some require wars to enact peace, and others take an opposition to war altogether. And so I tried to figure out like how do you make sense of a term when it means so many different things.
Feel that individual feels very helpless when they talk about peace. They always want a higher power to come in and act something. They always want a high power to punish the bad and then punish the conquerors. Yeah, and then they want to like protect themselves, or in the name of self-defense, they attack others. And yes, and it seems that they just want a higher power to like get them peace instead of it's something that's already in them. It seems that it's something that they can never get, and yeah, it's an aspiration.
Yes, that's just like I think for the terrorist attack or things like that, people always like the United States, I think they always call themselves doing something for justice, but actually they're also hurting other people. And just like sometimes parents, I think they love their children, but they love in the wrong way, or imposing all their things on their children and framing in a nice way, and then doing something may not be good for people.
Immanuel Kant, in his essay on PC, also speaks specifically about the notion of the stranger and the notion of being hospitable to the stranger. And when he talks about perpetual peace, and he talks about nation states, and he talks about a global kind of society that would move incrementally or not towards more peaceful relations, he also talks about the way that you should or should not aspire to invite the stranger into your home. Do you see yourselves inviting strangers into your home? Could you imagine a scenario where somebody were coming to you as a stranger, not as a friend already, asking for refuge? Could you imagine inviting them in?
Well, I'm educated not to take strangers in. What I will do is to help them to get help from from the government, from some other social service provider. Yeah.
It's so dangerous to do it. It's not only my concern, my family's security concern. Because a stranger means I don't know anything about him or her. I would like what she said, offer assistance, but it's so hard for me to let him stay in my home overnight.
Similar to them, I would not invite them to my house. Yeah, I'll give them money to rent a room or something.
It's hard for me to accommodate someone I don't know. Yeah, so I same as them. Someone that I don't know actually comes. I'm thinking about my comfort zone, and that's like a self-defense mechanism is on when it comes to, you know, this stranger knocking on my door.